Hey y'all, and welcome to Southern Fried Spooky, the podcast home of all things Southern spooky and likely to vanish.
Likely to vanish.
Likely.
Okay.
I'm your Carolina girl, Heather.
I vanished.
Oh, I see. That was our Florida man, Tony.
I vanished.
And I would like to invite you to our virtual mountain trail and hike alongside us.
And don't vanish.
To be honest, I'm going to be hanging out in the picnic shelter, most likely.
That will be me hiking.
Yeah, probably. Which means come find us on our various social media platforms and leave likes, comments, star-filled reviews.
Yeah, indeed.
Yes, all the good stuff.
Yes. So, do the thing!
Do the thing. This week, we will cover another mysterious vanishing, where the victim is out enjoying nature and gets swallowed up by it somehow.
It's like the one where the guy is like training for the marathon, and his friends are like right behind him in the truck, and the guy suddenly falls, and he's just gone.
Yeah, those are the ones that baffle me the most.
Yeah.
And while this tale, this particular one, is a little short, not super short, but a little short.
But you did add something else.
Do have a kind of a bonus story at the end that's not creepy, it's just kind of amusingly weird.
Yes, I like amusingly weird.
Obviously, look who you're with.
Exactly.
In September of 1981, I would have been in first or second grade?
I would have been two.
I'm robbing the cradle, aren't I? Ms. Thelma Pauline Melton, known to her friends as Polly, because she was a parrot. Not really. And her husband, Bob Melton.
Also known as a parrot.
Drove to the Deep Creek Trail in the Smoky Mountain National Park.
Okay.
Have you ever been there?
I have seen it. I have never been through
it. Yeah. I have been there a few times. It is very lovely.
Yep.
Polly was 58, while Bob was in his late 70s.
That just sucks. Like, her
Speaking
name is
of
like,
robbing the cradle.
Her name is like Thelma Pauline Melton, and she gets Polly, and he's just Bob.
Polly loved Deep Creek Trail.
Yes.
And had routinely visited it. That's hard to say. Visited it for two decades. Thelma Pauline
Polly
McAllister was born in Alabama on February 26, 1923. Ooh, that was like yesterday. Mm-hmm. Not the 23 part. Two parents, Fred and
nice
Luella.
Yesterday. Picture it, Sicily, 1923.
Almost. Her parents were Fred and Luella, which is actually quite pretty.
Luella, yeah.
She was one of six children.
Luella DeVille.
Not quite. Those who knew Polly described her as friendly, intelligent, and generous. She loved the outdoors and was an avid hiker, and in younger days had been a teacher. Twice divorced with no children, impressive, Polly married...
That's because she taught kids. She understood.
You're probably not wrong. She married Robert Bob Melton.
Poor Bob.
A man 20 years her senior in 1975. I would have been one. The couple,
I wouldn't have even been born yet.
No. The world was a quiet place then.
Exactly. That's when, in 1979, that's when the Fire Nation attacked.
Totally. The couple resided in Jacksonville, Florida.
Been there multiple times.
And you love it.
Oh, yes. It is an armpit.
For most of the year, but spent each fall living in their Airstream trailer in North Carolina's Deep Creek campground near the Great Smoky Mountains National Park.
Indeed.
Bob maneuvered their Airstream trailer into a comfortable spot. He was no longer able to join Polly on most of these hiking excursions because...
He was 20 years her senior!
70, and a little bit ailing. But so Polly knew if she wanted company, she'd need to turn elsewhere. She had some friends in the campground. Polly went hiking daily, if the weather permitted, with her longtime friends Trula Gudger
and another Pauline.
And Pauline Red Canyon. I'm assuming she's a
That's Canyon.
That's what I said.
You said Canyon.
I totally did not.
Yes. Her name is Red Cannon.
Yep. That's kind of a cool name.
She sounds like a pirate.
Right? We want Redhead.
Arr, go and get her. Her Captain Red Cannon.
Cute voice, weird quote. On this particular day, Polly prepared spaghetti sauce for dinner. That's exciting. She planned to have with for dinner that she was going to have with Bob later that evening. The specific trail they were taking was categorized as easy or moderate, depending on the source.
So not a Black Diamond trail.
No. And there really wasn't any difficult terrain to speak of to be particularly worried about. Polly was, as we have noted, much younger than her husband, but she was still a little past middle age. She and her friends began hiking the trail. Now, according to one source, she kind of lagged behind a little bit, so of course her friends teased her. And on their way back to the campground, she stepped up her pace and caught up and walked ahead of her friends.
Maybe it was the giant Sasquatch that was trailing close behind them.
Right. And indeed, she did leave them behind. They saw her walk over a small hill and then go out of sight. They assumed they would see her back at the trailer.
I imagine now it's the Polly Doppler effect.
Yeah. I guess. It was late afternoon by the time the friends made it back to the campsite. Bob was still inside, but Polly was nowhere around. Puzzled, Polly's friends told their husbands about Polly's apparent disappearance. So the two men immediately went to the Deep Creek Trail and retraced the route that the ladies had taken, but they found nothing. They also questioned any hikers they passed along the way, but no one had noticed a woman matching Polly's description. And they looked around, searched as best they could, but they found nothing to hint at where she might have gone. They finally reported her missing at 6 p.m. that evening. So the trail was closed for 4 days, closed to the public.
Yeah.
During which time, over 150 people and 9 search dogs came out to look for Polly over 100 miles of trails and creeks.
Now, keep in mind, this is 81.
Yep.
So there aren't drones or even widely used helicopters.
Yeah, probably not, as you say, widely used. They existed.
Yeah, they damn sure existed. It's just most of them were for special use only.
Yeah, so, you know, none of those infrared heat-seeking stuff.
The flare cameras?
Yeah, yeah. Yep, the technology at the time were the dogs.
Indeed.
And at one point, a dog alerted to a fallen tree, but the searchers posited that she may have just stopped to catch her breath there. Like, sat on the branch, I guess?
Yeah.
And the dogs didn't pick up on her scent any other location. This left the search parties very perplexed. Now, how could a... Oh, dear, what you got?
Aliens.
Well, that is one theory. But how could a woman who is 5'11", that's actually taller than I am...
That's taller than me, yeah.
Just vanish in full daylight, practically under the noses of her walking companions.
Thank you.
Somehow, she'd managed to do that very thing. Investigators also believed that Polly Melton was no longer in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. If she had been in the park, the dogs would have found her. They were well-trained, said park ranger Dennis Burnett. Curiously, Polly did not have her medication, her identification, or any money with her when she vanished. Just a pack of cigarettes.
Wow.
It was the 80s. She was a 2-pack-a-day smoker.
Good lord, and she was still hiking?
Yeah. And on medication for nausea and high blood pressure.
Wow.
Doesn't sound like she should really be walking. Well, I don't know. Maybe she needed to be walking.
Maybe.
And for medical reasons, she was no longer permitted to drive, so she didn't have car keys with her. I mean, she probably wouldn't have anyway, since they were in their trailer. Anyway.
Yeah.
The day she went missing itself gave no particularly ominous clues. She mostly kept to her routines. Mostly.
Yeah.
Polly went to a volunteer job during the mountain season, and she'd been doing it for 4 years, where she would pass out meals to the other elderly at Bryson City Presbyterian Nutrition Center.
The more elderly.
I suppose.
The elder early.
Right. The previous day, it was reported that she made several phone calls using the work phone, which, in the entire time she'd worked there, she had never done before.
Huh.
Now, her pastor suggested that she had been struggling with depression after her mother passed away earlier in the year. He also mentioned that he thought Polly may have been having an affair with another man at the time.
Well, Bob was 20 years her senior.
Right. Granted, this idea has never been substantiated.
Yeah.
It's just a theory. Just a working theory. Also of note, she had been prescribed Valium in 1979, but she had stopped taking it before 81, so that's a curiosity. Yet her husband's Valium was missing after she disappeared. And it's never been determined that Polly took them, but it does seem kind of likely.
As the kids would say nowadays, it's sus.
I mean, how else could you... It's not like you can just sneak through an airstream when there's a person who's just kind of permanently in there. Probably another one of the most intriguing clues regarding this disappearance is that in April 1982, a check was written... Okay, kids, do you know what checks are? Written to Polly Melton and then cashed in Birmingham.
Alabama.
We're not British. I don't know why I said it that way. And investigations into that check were an utter dead end. So it was a weirdness and then nothing. So the questions remain. Could Polly have planned to vanish that day? Was she so dissatisfied with her life that she would choose to walk away from it?
I mean, in 81... it was a hell of a lot easier to slip off grid.
Oh, yeah.
And completely vanish into another life.
Much easier.
They didn't have the skill to track down people, especially with the advent of internet.
Back then, there wasn't the digital footprint there is today.
There was no digital footprint back then.
But also, there's the thing of this woman is 5'10", 5'11". She's over 180 pounds. She stepped away from her friends just a little ways ahead of them and just was gone.
Now
even
that,
if she had planned to disappear,
that takes some planning.
She would have had to be able to sprint away, which I kind of don't think she could, and go through, I don't know, all the brush and underbrush without making any noise.
I mean, playing in the woods, knowing the woods the way I can, you can do that. You can be at full sprint, turn on a dime and just move into the side, move into the bushes or whatnot, and have somebody completely walk by you without even knowing about it. But you have to be pretty spry for that to happen.
Yeah. I'm kind of thinking a 58-year-old white woman.
No, probably not.
Is that
not
likely to happen?
It can be done, but not with her build, not being unnoticed. And not with any noise. There would have to have been some indication of her going off trail.
Yeah, and that's another thing, is there just was no sign of that. And, of course, that the dogs, if she had tried to disappear,
they would have found her. Yeah, they would have found her.
Even if her trail led to a parking lot and then ended, because there was a parking lot kind of further down. But, yeah, nothing. She was just...
Unless she was carrying coffee grounds, which is a good way of throwing a dog off your trail...
Says the coffee baron of Renfest.
Coffee grounds and Tabasco sauce, if you have them in a bag just on you somewhere, and not a plastic bag, I mean like a linen sack or something like that that's breathable. If you have that on, it will completely throw a dog's nose off.
Huh, that's curious. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. So it'll just mask the human scent?
Yep, pretty much. They're both so overpowering that the human scent just gets lost in those scents.
It kind of reminds me of the Night Watch story in Discworld, where one of the cops there is a werewolf, and people figure this out and that she's really good at tracking, so they start carrying around essential oil peppermint.
Cherry?
No, just peppermint.
No, what I'm saying was the character Cherry?
Yeah. No.
Cherry?
Not Cherry. Okay. Angua.
Okay. You said Discworld, instantly I went to The Watch.
Well, that's the group we're talking about, so yeah. I guess it holds the same. I wonder if peppermint would work for dogs.
I'm not sure. I know that there's a reason why when they're training canine officers, they tell their handlers, the police officers that have the canines, to avoid taking them near coffee shops and stuff because it just messes with their nose. This is why if you have small dogs and stuff like that and you constantly smell or you're constantly making coffee, it completely throws the dog's nose off.
Interesting. Yep. So that whole, let's go to a cafe and be all French and take our little puppies with us.
It messes with the dogs.
No wonder they're so angry.
it completely messes. Coffee will screw with a dog's nose. Bad.
I'm so glad we have cats.
Cats love the smell.
Apparently. Okay, so there's a theory of maybe she did meet someone. Maybe she, found someone that, active as she was, it would be difficult to do things with someone who is much older and somewhat an invalid. I've been there.
Well, if I was going to plan something like that, I would have somebody sitting off trail on a horse.
Oh, that's
I would outrun my friends. I would get on the horse and and travel off trail.
And hope they don't hear it.
Because you're high enough to where you're not rubbing on branches so dogs can pick you up or whatnot. Uh-huh. You're on the back of a horse. You're moving fast enough to where you can be out of sight rather quickly. And horses, for contrary to Hollywood, are rather silent creatures.
Hmm.
They're very quiet. So, I mean, it could be planned. It very well could be planned.
Interesting.
Yep.
Well, so that is the story about Our Lady Polly.
Mm-hmm. Which is very weird.
It is kind of cool.
I don't enjoy the premise of someone disappearing, but I like the stories of them.
You are fascinated by disappearances.
I really am. Especially like the missing 411 cases and stuff like that. Yeah, absolutely.
They're so disturbing.
Yeah.
And weirdos that we are, and a lot of other people, it's like a roller coaster. We sort of enjoy the disturbance, I guess, the fear, the adrenaline.
Okay, so, and what's story number two?
Story number two mm-hmm. is about a little cat.
Okay, you're gonna have to, this better be good.
I'd like to think it's pretty good.
Okay.
Okay, as we've mentioned, we have cats.
Mm-hmm. We have four of them.
Do you remember the time you took Gideon, our very large, large boy, to the vet?
Yes.
How much fun was that?
Oh, yeah. He did not shut up. He yelled and screamed the whole time.
And we have a cat carrier. You know, cats just love travel, don't they?
Oh, yes.
The Vikings took them on boats. I don't know how they did that.
Please note the sarcasm.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
On October 15th, 1910,
yep.
Kiddo the cat.
No, just to preface this.
Yeah?
This is before the Titanic sank.
By a couple years.
Yes.
Kiddo the cat became the first of his kind to attempt to cross the Atlantic Ocean by airship. Mind you, this was not his plan.
Yeah.
So if you've ever taken the cat to a vet, you kind of know how this is going to go.
Yep.
In 1910, an American publisher and explorer, because that's just how people were back then, named Walter Wellman and five other people boarded a ship, an airship called the America.
Okay, so an airship is a Zeppelin, or
essentially,
it's a blimp. Yes.
This contraption was a giant air balloon with a wooden cabin and kind of a lifeboat attached mm-hmm. underneath.
Yeah.
And altogether, they tried to fly over the Atlantic Ocean. And the air balloon crew was very modern at the time. They decided to bring along a radio system, which was onto this pioneering trip. Additionally, someone, I think it was Wellman, grabbed the resident cat that lived in the hangar, named Kiddo, for good luck. Now, as you can imagine, the Grey Tabby was not pleased about his inclusion in this journey.
You'd be pretty pissed off, too.
His howling annoyed the airship's chief engineer, Melvin Vanneman. The kitty didn't take to air travel too well, and consequently had an utter meltdown during the first part of the experience. Simon recounted in his log that the cat was running around the cabin like a caged squirrel. So you have to imagine, if you've ever seen pictures of a blimp, the size of the balloon versus the size of the cabin.
Yeah.
The cabin, and this is a primitive one.
It's about the size of our living room.
Six people.
Yeah.
And a cat. An angry cat. The radio operator, Jack Irwin, sat at his station, which, because of the space constraints, was in fact in the lifeboat hanging from the bottom of the ship's cabin. Irwin yelled up to Simon at one point that the cat was raising hell and driving him mad, and that they should probably leave it behind before they got too far out. Simon disagreed, saying, "We must keep the cat at all costs. We can never have luck without a cat aboard."
Wow.
Now, I already mentioned that the America was the first airship to have radio equipment.
Yeah.
Kiddo has the distinction of being the subject of the first ever radio communication from an aircraft in flight.
Roy, come and get this damn cat!
The tabby kept disturbing the crew, so, of course, they put it in a sack and tried to lower him down to a news boat that was below them.
Wow.
However, I'm just trying to envision. First off, how do you get a cat in a sack? I mean,
yeah.
That's like about as easy as stuffing an octopus into a net bag. Yeah. It just doesn't work well. But he was pulled back up because the weather was all stormy conditions and they didn't really allow for a safe handoff. Of course, if we'd left it up to the radio operator, they would have just dropped him in the ocean. But after that, Simon noted that Kiddo must have realized that he could have been in a worse place than an airship, and henceforth began to behave himself fairly well.
That's good. I mean, he had to acclimate a little bit.
Yeah, right? Cats are terrestrial beings. They're not too... I mean, they're okay on ships, but airship, totally new.
Right.
These 71 hours that Kiddo and the rest of the crew spent in flight were fraught with storms and engine failure. After traveling just over 1,300 miles from their launch point, the America sent out a distress signal. At this point, this is 1910, would they have had SOS?
Yeah.
Okay.
Morse code's been around since early 1800s.
Okay, well, you know this, I would not. So, okay, they would have that, definitely.
Yeah.
Kiddo and the crew were evacuated via the airship's lifeboat, which is also the radio operator station, onto a Royal Mail steamship. The America, no longer weighed down by the boat, crew, and angry fluffball, drifted away and crashed somewhere off the coast of Maryland. Fortunately...
Oh, and the year Morse code was invented was 1837.
Okay, thank you. Fortunately, the SS Trent, a passing steamer owned by the Royal Mail, found the castaways. According to the airship's navigator, Murray
It was supposed
Simon,
to only be a three-hour tour.
Kiddo preferred the seafaring portion of the journey. He described Kiddo perched up on the lifeboat's sail, washing his face in the sun, a pleasant picture of feline content. Despite not making it across the Atlantic, the America did break the record for the longest sustained flight at the time.
Yeah.
Kiddo returned to dry land, probably very happy for the effect,
yep,
and a hero, and even got to meet his adoring public during his residency in a gilded cage, which again, can't imagine the cat would love, filled with pillows at New York City's Gimbel's department store.
Wow.
And later retired from the aviation field, going to live with one of Wellman's daughters. The crew credited Kiddo and his nine lives with helping them survive the perilous journey.
Wow. Okay, that's kind of cool. I can only, like, I want to see, like, a short movie made about this where just the cat's, like, causing sheer chaos
right,
with these six guys just staring off into oblivion trying not to kill each other or the cat.
Right. I guess the closest thing we have really is Alien, don't we?
Yeah. Jones.
Well, he survived. So did the lady. Yeah. Well, dear listeners, you've wandered off the beaten path to follow our story and lost another half an hour or so,
yep,
of your precious life. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please be sure to leave some comments on our Facebook page and sprinkle some stars on your podcast platform of choice.
Indeed.
Join us next week for more weirdness. As usual, we don't know what it's going to be yet.
Probably not more cats in the air.
I think that's a rather niche kind of place. Yeah, I don't have too many more stories of that, I don't think.
Well. At least we covered this one, right?
We absolutely did. Yep. I'm your Carolina girl, Heather.
And I'm your Florida man, Tony.
Oh, you've unvanished?
I've unvanished.
You reappeared?
Yes.
And we are
Southern Fried Spooky.
Until next week. Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all. God, I can't imagine. Just, I mean, look at the stuff that I go through now. Whenever you get home, the cats are, like, mid-zoomy, bouncing off things, breaking video games. Like, I mean, they are just... Now, imagine that in a, like, 10x10 room.
I wonder...
This living room.
I wonder if they had figured out about litter boxes back then. I mean... Wow.
Well, you scared the crap out of the cat. How can you tell? T, we scared the crap.